Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
I am off for the next few days. Tomorrow, you've got a treat in store for you. Layla Rahimi and Gabe Ramirez are going to host the show, and I think it's going to be a blast. So make sure that you tune in, because I can't wait for you to hear it. It's just going to be fun. Those two are smart and fun, and it will be a lot of fun stuff between talking about Cubs and White Sox and the NBA Finals. Gabe's a huge basketball head, so there'll be plenty for them to discuss, and they'll be holding it down. And I'll be back next week at some point. Parkins and Spiegel are going to be here from now until infinity. Hello, boys.
Sup?
What up, Lawrence?
Sup?
Today's the day. Today's the day for... Oh, I'm going to tell you what the day is, Lawrence. One okay. of my, the your favorite stories that I ever told you about.
NFL schedule.
No, that's a great day.
It's not.
I remember how much you loved when I told you the details of John Elway fumbling the bat.
Oh my God.
Right?
That is, oh.
Today's the day. Because we now.
$4.6 billion.
We now get this is the final chapter in the bag fumbling story. So for anyone who does not remember, John Elway, when he retired, was offered the opportunity to buy 20% of the Broncos for $36 million. And he had the opportunity in that 20% to have right of first purchase if the Bolin family ever sold the rest of the team, which their trust today reportedly sold for $4.65 billion. But even if John Elway would have not taken the opportunity to buy the remaining 80% of the team, the $36 million invested for 20% of the team in 1998 at the current sale price today of $4.65 billion, $930 million.
So he could have turned 36 into 930.
But he took five in cash.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well,
so yikes. Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah, there is
How do you feel like your deal? I mean, I know he's a Hall of Famer, top 10 quarterback all time, very rich. He's done well in business otherwise. Don't you
has Super Bowl wins?
Don't you feel like on the day that you know officially that the investment's worth that you missed out on the $1 billion?
Yeah,
don't you feel like it hurts?
I would imagine that understanding that there was $1 billion in front of you and you didn't get it probably cuts deeper than we can even imagine.
I would think so too.
This is where I want to say something about happiness and life.
Right.
And what it's really about.
I don't know, Speeds. I don't think Pollyanna's going to work on this one.
Well, let me just keep talking about Pollyanna and see if she shows up. It's a person, right? I forget. But yeah, I want to say something about happiness and priorities. But I too would enjoy not having bank accounts to worry about. We all do. I hate it. Isn't it just the worst when you let yourself think about some of the things in your life that you can't quite control that you want to be better? I'm sure John Elway has some things that he'd like to be better, and $930 million might help that.
Yeah. Wait.
Yes.
Yeah.
And being part of the most exclusive club in the world.
What, the billionaires club?
The owning the NFL
ownership
team club. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because, and that's the thing, like, you're right, Lawrence. I wonder if he's thinking about, man, what my 20% would be worth if I would have cashed out, or if he's thinking about, today's the day that I would have gotten the financing to buy the other 80%.
That's right.
And I would now own 100% of it. Or not, he would not own 100% of an NFL team, but he'd be the majority owner and face of an ownership group.
Or he used that $5 million for something really important and meaningful in his life. Mm-hmm. And he has long since rationalized the missed opportunity so he can put on his pants every day. And continue with his existence.
It's like there was that story of the crypto guy who bought like thousands of Bitcoin back in like 2010 and then forgot the password to his like encrypted wallet.
And
after X number of tries, it locks out and it's gone forever. And it was worth like $300 million. And the guy was like, yeah, I mean, I forgot the password, so it's gone.
There's so many stories like that. There's a story about the external hard drive. You know that story about the external hard drive that guy couldn't figure out a way to get back into, and he knew there was crypto on it, and then it had been thrown out. And so he was like searching the dump, literally searching every inch of a city dump trying to find the external hard drive.
I mean, it'd be worth it, right?
Like, I'd go dumpster diving for $300 million.
If you have the eureka moment and you find it, the $300 million is worth it.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so this landfill, it's a 20-gig hard drive that has $500 million worth of Bitcoin in it in Wales. And it's a guy who mined the cryptocurrency back in 2013, and somehow it got thrown away. And so he's slowly going through the dump in Wales trying to find it.
This is the zenith of the guy that has valuable comic books that he left at his parents' house and they threw away.
Oh, it really is that.
Yeah.
My dad still tells me that his mom, my Nana, threw away his boxes of baseball cards that included several rookie Mickey Mantles. Several. Oh, yeah. So those stories are everywhere, but that's why those cards ended up getting so valuable.
Scarcity, yes, right. Everyone's like, this is a piece of paper.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you're done with this. You don't want to put this on your bicycle anymore.
Right. This used to, the most valuable thing in this at the time was the gum. Yeah, that's...
You can't trade that for anything. You're off in college.
That'd be tough.
Tossed him.
$930 million. What? So that was the first thing that I thought of when I saw that final sale price. I thought of poor John Elway. And then I thought, what do you think the McCaskies are thinking today?
Well, I had this conversation. I had Youssef Khan on, and we were discussing it. So I asked him because he writes a lot of business stuff for his site, First and Penn. And I asked him, I said, what are the Bears worth if the Broncos are 4.6? He's like 5.5.
Take the over.
And I'm like you. I'm like, what are they thinking? Because it is going to be difficult to bust up this ownership and the amount of money that will end up having to be paid if Virginia passes down her shares. It's going to be a tax nightmare. What would be the point where as a family you go, you know what? Let's just push in our chips and let's just cash out this place and let's get our $5.5 billion and move on to whatever it is that we want to do forever.
Well, they're going to build a new stadium, right? In Denver, they're going to does the new Broncos owner own the stadium that Pat Bowlen built, or is that in any way a partnership with the city of Denver? And I don't know the answer to that because...
I don't either. Like the Colorado Sports Authority?
Right, exactly. Their version of that. Like Empower Field at Mile High when they built it.
It's a fun place to see a game. I know that.
Is it?
That place gets loud.
But, I mean, obviously, the Bears, the McCaskies would not even consider selling until they figure out a way to finance and build and eventually own their own stadium. Correct? Or is it still attractive when they have not built the stadium yet? I think it's more attractive once they build.
If they close on the parcel of land.
If they've got the land.
If they've got the land, I think it's more attractive because then the person or people that are buying it get to do their own thing,
right?
With a stadium.
No, that's a good that's a good point. You get to be your own Jerry Jones and make it however you want to make it.
I think it was a ridiculously shrewd move by Ted Phillips and George McCaskey to do this thing in Arlington Heights. And I'm not saying even from a fan comfort level, because I don't think they care as much as they would tell you that they care.
Mm-hmm.
But taking every bit of leverage away from the city of Chicago and having the opportunity to maybe build your own place, and you don't even have to commit to that, but you know you could do it.
Yeah.
Once you close on that land, you know that you could do it, and there'd be people lining up to design something awesome for them. And it just, to me, that move, I think, and I'm not a person who's really good with valuations or anything like that, I think the Arlington Heights move increased the sale value of the Bears by $1.5 billion.
I bet it did. I bet it did, because you're showing the possibilities. And wouldn't it'd be kind of nice to sell and get out before making the choices, right or wrong, on building out that thing. Since you screwed up the last one so strong, you could get out now and let the new guy have to live with it. And you use that as a selling point. You get to do whatever you want with your stadium.
Yeah, I'll take the over on $5.5 billion too. Like,
you'll go over that?
Yeah, man. Like,
okay.
If the Broncos is it's the most expensive sale in the history of American sports. So, and Denver is
market 22 or something like
right.
that, maybe.
And and it's a city that, while they're very passionate Broncos fans, it's like the only one that they're like super passionate about.
I mean, they're passionate about the Avalanche.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, okay.
I mean, I get it. It's hockey, but
right. Well, it's not the same number of people, right? It's a small fan base, but a passionate fan base. And Chicago is just a different beast. Like, it just, so many people that are living in Denver now aren't from Denver. I'd think that the Bears would get 6, maybe even more. It's just, I think that they're probably going to see it through. Like, if they can get the financing for the land, they think that they can get the financing for the stadium. And if they can get the financing for the stadium, why sell?
Well, because it's we'll have to see how Virginia's doing. It was once because Virginia is the great unifier, and we've heard tales now for decades about not necessarily infighting, but just different ideas within a very disparate and chaotic, dark, odd family.
Oh, I mean,
about what they want inside that family, wanting to cash out.
Right. If I was an heir to the throne, but didn't care at all about football, my vote would be cash out.
Mm.
Give me my 5% of $6 billion.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Unless was it Kevin McCaskey who's got the bar out in Arlington Heights?
Yeah.
Come on, build out here, man. My bar's gonna take off. Been looking for a way to boost that business.
Yeah,
need the Bears.
The Bears would help. The Bears would certainly help. But yeah, that's a hell of a thing. I'm gonna buy something for $4.6 billion, and I guess be able to pay cash if they wanted to.
Yep.
Like, you saw how rich they were.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
They got some smart people along for the ride too, including Chicago's very own Melody Hobson.
Yeah. Yeah. Must be nice.
And what type of money is she bringing to the table? Well, her own that she self-made, and the billions of dollars that George Lucas has.
Right. To go with the billions and billions and billions that the Walton family and Walmart has. Yeah, that'll that will work.
So the Broncos Stadium is owned by the Metropolitan Football Stadium District.
Right, they don't.
We were
technically
so close to getting the name right.
Yeah, they don't. They don't technically own the land, but apparently they have a stake in the process, so they can choose what to do with development around the stadium.
They
is
pay,
what I'm reading.
Okay, cool. Yeah, they pay $3.25 million each year to rent the stadium.
It's a good deal.
Yeah, which does not seem like a lot. Really. The public spent $289 million on that Broncos stadium.
What a sweetheart deal. It'd be so cool to be the people to write the tax law in your favor. These billionaires, man.
God.
It's ridiculous.
I hate them.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I hate them all. Actually, not them all.
Yeah, not all, but the vast majority. Not a favorable class. It's not a likable group on the whole, if we could typecast. Lawrence, you got a good vibe or a good feel on this NBA Finals?
After two games? I still am going with Boston, and I know that they've pretty much only played two good quarters in these first two games, but I'm still going with them on this. It's weird. I heard Bomani talking about this on Monday, and I think he's right. There's something to seeing Draymond do the "I'm crazy" Draymond that makes me feel like they don't think they can win it. That he's already gone to the bag of tricks of "I might be crazy and I might do some crazy stuff out here" when I'm yelling at officials. That if they're already there and we aren't seeing the best version of Klay Thompson, and Jordan Poole has not lived up to what he was doing in the first two rounds of the NBA playoffs, I still really like Boston because of their defense to win it.
Well, I mean, it is an incredible defense, and I've been impressed with how they defend the improvisational jazz of that offense. But, man, Jordan Poole was that dude in the third quarter, and that was it. That was the knockout punch, was that stretch from Jordan Poole. Steph just needs one. He either needs Klay or Poole to be that explosive partner, because Steph is still Steph.
He's the best player in the series, clearly.
That's the thing. He is the best player in the series. He still has moves that surprise you. He's got a level of comfort that's absurd. He's got a willingness to be second fiddle to Klay for a quarter or Poole for a quarter or whatever it is. So I just think they need either of them to step up, and Poole did.
I agree with the observation by Bomani, but I don't necessarily agree with the conclusion. Like, Draymond was insane in game two. Like, it felt like anything was in play. Like, fight a fan, fight Udoka. it felt like anything was in play.
Manic energy from the get-go.
Yeah, it was insane. Like, trash-talking everybody, like reckless abandon, but I thought that it was reflective of the desperation of when the home team loses game one.
You have to win game two.
You had to win.
Yeah.
That's my point. Like, you're already there. And, like, know that we're looking at Boston and we're going, man, you guys really bleeped the bed in game two of that series. But they did their job. They took home court away and they won one on the road.
Yeah, but yes, they did. But Boston is 5-4 at home in these playoffs. They're 3-4 at home in the playoffs since the first round. Like, you can win in Boston, and Golden State can win on the road. Like, the pressure is on the home team. Like, so now, like, Boston has to defend their home court.
Yeah, we just saw Boston-Miami finished road.
Yeah,
right?
So what I love about this is that, like, I thought both games, even though both have been double-digit games, like, crazy high level of basketball, and I feel like I know less about it after two games than I did before the series started. Like, I think it is wide open.
And I think that desperation, you know, with Draymond's manic energy, that's the way you got to play in a finals. And yes, like you say, especially down one. Like,
well, there was some stuff also, like, from Synergy Sports. Russillo was talking about this, that, like, they can track, right, how fast you run, how many steps you take, how much ground you cover. And Golden State was, like, below their regular season average in game one of the NBA Finals.
Hmm.
So, like, they just didn't play that hard.
They thought they had a knockout.
In terms of energy expended, they did not play that hard.
Don't you think they thought they had a knockout punch in that first quarter when Steph was like that? They were like, oh, we're just going to roll.
Yeah, maybe. Yep. And so, like, I think it is certainly possible that, yeah, they played that crazy card early, Lawrence, but, like, it was because the message after game one was, guys, you guys didn't play hard. You didn't play hard. This is the NBA Finals.
So let's create some energy with some crazy.
Right. So, because when you tell Draymond that he didn't play hard, he goes insane. Like Steph just runs faster to get off screens, right? And Klay runs faster to get, but Draymond's like, oh, you. You said that I didn't play hard? Yeah. I'm going to go 94 feet off this rebound and barrel into people.
He's so fun and so special. He's like Rodman in not caring about scoring, and it's good because he can't, but he's so much more skilled as a ball handler, as a playmaker, and he's a more stable version of crazy on the court as well. But the thing about Steph is, like, as good as Boston's defense is, and they are so connected and everything like that, their skill as individual defenders doesn't really help you that much against Steph, because Steph will make you defend him with three different guys on every possession. Because the number of switches, have you seen any of those breakdowns? Like,
yeah.
There's like 5 to 7 switches Boston is executing on every possession, and they're good enough to make it work defensively as best they can, but they don't have 3 or 4 people who can all defend Steph, and that's why they're not.
He's, like, I don't know what the right superlative is. Like, his greatest shooter of all time honestly feels, like, reductive. He is.
It is. He's better than that. He's slippery now, too.
Well, it's just
There's something about, like, the momentum of what he does.
The gravity. Like, did you say attention?
Yeah. The attention, like, even when he doesn't touch the ball.
You're freaked out.
Like, when Marcus Smart is, like, overcompensating and picking him up 60 feet away from the basket when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. Like, now the defensive player of the year is just not paying attention to the other 4 guys on the court. Like, that's a crazy amount of attention to get when he's like, yeah, I'm actually taking this offensive possession off, but he still takes the defensive player of the year, whether you thought he should have won the award or not, and I did not. But, like, you're still taking him completely out of the play. Like, that is an amount of attention that, I mean, I guess LeBron got
because you would have
to, like, be there to, like, try to keep him out of the paint at times, but it's just different.
I mean, the first thing I think of really is Gretzky or somebody like that who's so transcendent in terms of the field and or the ice, but spatially to matter like that, where you just always have to worry because they'll score from anywhere or create an opening for somebody from anywhere. Now, how much it changes the geometry of
what spacing.
You do.
It's crazy. Like, there's no one, it's obvious, but there's no one else like him. We've never
seen
anyone else.
What's really interesting about him too, Danny, is the thing that people picked up from Steph were, like, how Steph changed the game. And you're right. Like, the geometry of the game speaks is completely changed because of Steph. But what I wish the younger players that grew up idolizing Steph Curry, it's not the 30-foot shots. It's what we've been talking about. It's his ability to be off the ball and drive a defender crazy because he doesn't stop. He doesn't stop moving. He doesn't stop trying to find spaces to get the ball and then do damage with it. His cardio is amazing. And watching, like, you can get tired watching a quarter of possessions by Golden State and you're just watching Steph because he's in constant motion. And I imagine that when you see that you have to defend Steph Curry, it keeps you up at night because you know you're going to run.
And it's not as simple, really, or relentless in the same way that, like, Reggie Miller was or Rip Hamilton was in running around screens and around the whole court doing circles and stuff like that. Step is like jab stepping and stepping back 3 or 4 different times in different ways. You never know where he's going to stop. And that whole team reacts. The whole Warriors offense reacts. When he does, they re-space, which is part of their thing.
It's just, and he's a better finisher at the basket than Reggie Miller was. You know what I mean?
It's crazy.
You can jump out on him if you want to, and then he can beat you off the dribble.
Reggie Miller does not deserve to be in the team photo with Steph. The guy averaged 18 points a game for his career. Like, it's not
Tony Gill just smiled.
He was a good three. He was a great 3-point shooter in an era when nobody else shot threes.
But, well, first of all, I brought him up because of the relentlessness of the running.
I know
just
what you're
like
talking
about. Rip Hamilton.
No, and it happens all the time.
I know, but Reggie as, like, a playoff scorer with a dog killer mentality, to quote Dave Kaplan the other day.
God, I love that.
I mean, come on, man. You gotta recognize that there was a period there where Reggie was one of the 3 or 4 best players, 3 or 4 best scorers and killers and alphas in the NBA.
Dog killer mentality.
like he was. He was
oh,
there.
Cap.
Oh, yeah, that was unfortunate.
Oh, it's so great.
I insist, Lawrence, that there's an unspoken comma between dog and killer.
Does he have the dog mentality, the killer mentality?
Right. Right.
But he went with the dog killer
not
mentality.
Dog killer, dog killer mentality.
Right.
Dog killer mentality.
No, it's a dog killer mentality.
I'm giving him the credit for the unspoken comma. Anybody with me?
No.
No.
No. Absolutely not.
No, I'm gonna give my guy Cap that comma.
Right?
I'm not giving that comma.
I think he should have done it with a finger. It was on TV. He should have done it with a finger, but the dog killer mentality. First of all, I'm not interested in the player if he has that dog killer mentality. I'm on record right now.
Yeah, it's big of you.
Yeah.
Coming off.
Yeah, if he's
anti-dog killer mentality.
If that's a German Shepherd murderer, I am not interested.
Yeah, we're not giving Zach LaVine the max.
Nope.
If he's got a dog killer mentality.
3 years. Maximum. Yeah.
If he wants to kill doodles, though, come on. By all means, knock
him
out.
All right, 4 years if he wants to knock out doodles.
That's Shane Reardon.
Dog killer mentality.
I mean,
so
seriously. Dude,
we did 10 minutes on it the other day, Lawrence, and I honestly didn't feel like it was enough.
If he's hurting golden retrievers, like Hub will come out there himself and do damage to that man.
Hub and David Hall will just grab the pitchforks.
That's an intimidating street
gang.
Yeah,
you don't want those guys coming
for
you.
You don't want a Hub and Haw after you. Although David will outrun all of us.
It's true. John Morosi, at 3:40 today. Mark Grody at 4:20. Great moment in the White Sox season last night, which we will discuss. Might have got a QB comp out of Matt Eberflus.
He said something about Justin Fields that was interesting.
Maybe.
Perhaps.
There's debate among the Bears beat, so we will play it and discuss it.
And then I'm sure he let someone hit him in practice to get tough.
Yes, and we will get more into that story as well. There's a lot to do today, Lawrence.
All right, boys. I'll see you next week.
All right, man. Enjoy your time off. That's Lawrence Holmes, Chris Tannehill. Everyone's back. Band's back together. Zopan kicks us off. Park and Spiegel on the score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.